I'm going to introduce my first guest this morning. And good morning, Captain Kieran O'Connor. How are you?
Good morning, madam. How are you this morning?
Not too bad. Tiny flustered. There's nothing like pressing the wrong button to really send you a little bit into a dizzy tiz there. But anyway, let's get down to business here. I'm delighted to welcome you here to Near FM at 90.3 on the Lifeline programme. Now, Kieran, you're a commercial pilot, but before you became a commercial pilot, you were an air traffic controller, weren't you?
Well, now, let's get the first thing is I'm an airline transport pilot. Commercial pilot is a...
Oh.
Is a more junior system that you would have in the airline industry.
So you would go from a private pilot to a commercial and then up to transport.
A commercial pilot, then you would go in as an airline transport pilot.
And that's the...
An airline transport pilot is one that would command heavy aircraft.
Oh, wow.
Such like that. Okay?
Okay. I'm duly corrected there. So, but you started as an air traffic controller, and when did you decide to change over and learn to fly, or was the opportunity there for you?
No, and I learned to fly purely for no other reason than as a hobby, I think, at the time. And then I just went on from there, became a flight instructor. And then I would have done my commercial pilot's license, and then when I was flying heavy-duty aircraft on that, I qualified as an airline transport pilot.
Oh, wow. And I know you must have flown everywhere and anywhere, but somebody told me that you had actually flown for the Red Cross and did some humanitarian flights. Is that true?
I did, yes. And that would have been, I was flying for Omega Air at the time, and we leased the aircraft out to the Red Cross and the United Nations. And that would have been flying quite a lot in Africa, most humanitarian flights and that sort of thing.
Kieran, was that dangerous?
No.
I mean, being shot at or something like that.
Well, you would, but they probably missed you, you know.
Okay.
As long as they were aiming at you, it was fine, because they never hit you.
Okay.
But
all right.
If you're following behind somebody else, that'll be a bit more dangerous. They were probably aiming at him and would hit you. But there you go.
Okay. Well, as I said before, you started flying and taking lessons. You were air traffic control. Did you enjoy that job, or was it very stressful?
I did.
Oh, you did?
I didn't find that stressful at all. I didn't find being an air traffic controller or being an airline pilot, I found none of them stressful whatsoever.
Oh, wow.
There you go. An air traffic controller is a very good job. There is no doubt about it. And it still is a very good job. If anybody's interested in the aviation industry and that, it is a very, very good job to have. And I worked on that for years and years. But I also flew at the same time. But I was working as an air traffic controller. I had some Aztecs, and they were twin-engine aircraft that we did. I flew for air taxi businesses and things like that.
Oh, right. And where did you start working for air traffic control? Was that in Dublin?
No, I was working in Shannon Airport.
Oh.
As an air traffic control assistant. And then you worked at that as an air traffic control assistant, and then you did your exams. Now, the exams were the same as those for an airline transport pilot, which were the exams that air traffic controllers did on the same basis. You did whatever was there, but you didn't get any freedoms when you went to change over to be a professional pilot. You still had to do those as well.
All right. Okay. And now I know you're an instructor but I will lead up to that. But apart from being a transport, the title is a transport commercial pilot.
An airline transport pilot.
I'm writing that
down. What the senior guys, those that flew in the airlines, would have an airline transport pilot's license and such.
Mm. And where did you learn to become a pilot? When did you?
I learned in Iona. Ah. Pierce Cahill, who ran a very good business there in Iona, and his son Peter Cahill is actually flying for the company that I saw there recently. And everybody learned to fly in Iona,
For our listeners, can you tell us whereabouts Iona is, please?
They're not there any longer.
No, but they were at the back of Dublin Airport, weren't they?
They were at the back of Dublin Airport. Iona was an exceptionally good company at the time. They had some twins that they ran in their business, and they also taught people to fly. And in fact, the first flying school, and I do believe this, was actually Iona. They would have been there before Derby Kennedy was there, and I think Derby Kennedy learned to fly in Iona.
Oh.
Prior to all that. But anyway, they were a lovely company. They were lovely people to be with.
And they used the commercial runway at Dublin Airport, didn't they?
It was the only one that was there.
The only one that was there.
it was the only piece of concrete that was there.
Now you did actually answer a question that I wanted to ask, and that was, when you started flying, did you meet any interesting people from early Irish aviation? And you've mentioned Piers Cahill and Derby Kennedy. Was there anybody else, characters particularly, that you met that you just...
There were loads of characters.
Oh, really?
During the period of time that you were learning to fly. I mean, at that time, there were even some nuns learning to fly to go to Africa to do their bits and pieces down there.
Oh, Mother of God!
there were great people. I mean, most of the people learning to fly at that time were great people. But also remember, at that time, there was Air Turris and there was Aer Lingus. And they were the only people who you could, as I say, go into the airline business with. On that. So everybody who was learning to fly at the time were doing it as a hobby. More than anything else. So that's where we all got instructors' ratings at the time, and that was just to teach people as a hobby to fly. And then some of us from that went on and did. I should explain this in a way. There was a private pilot's license, there was a commercial pilot's license, then there was an airline transport pilot's license. They were all different exams that you had to do at the time. Nowadays, you can bypass the commercial one and do the writtens for the airline transport pilot's license. Now, you won't be given an airline transport pilot's license until you're flying in an airline and you've reached something like 1,700 hours or something like that. Could I explain that properly?
No, you did. I was just thinking because... they kind of skip over a little bit. What I was asking about, you were saying that it's completely changed.
At my time, you had to do all of the exams. You had to do an exam, obviously, for a private pilot's license. Then you had to do the written exams for a commercial pilot's license. And then you had to do the written exams for an airline transport pilot's license. Now you can do directly the airline transport pilot's license.
Right.
And that covers the commercial pilot's license.
Now
so any of the guys that are learning to fly right now, they would be given a commercial pilot's license.
All right. Okay. Well, that leads me into something which I find absolutely fascinating, because you decided to open a flight school. And how did your company become one of the largest flight schools in the country?
By an accident, I think.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Okay.
Well, Iona went into heavier aircraft and things like that. That didn't work out too good for them. So they closed their business down for being a flying school. And I kind of drifted into having a flying school at that stage, in addition to me flying in the airline business.
So your fingers in everything at that time. Were you still at air traffic control and then doing flying in Africa when you could? And then
no, I was. I left air traffic control, and then I started flying heavier aircraft, and that I started flying the 707. And the 727. Now, when I was an air traffic controller, I got a job in a company called Clyden Airways flying DC-3s. And I was working as an air traffic controller at that time and flying DC-3s, which was delivering 3.5 ton of mail backwards and forwards across the Irish Sea every night. That was that particular part of it. And then we flew on an odd load of Greyhounds down to Rome and fish to Lannion and Ampere and places like that. It's good fun.
Oh my goodness. I'm nearly stopping my tracks now. This is absolutely amazing. And I know that the National Flight Center also taught students to fly seaplanes. Have you got? Are you a qualified seaplane? Is that the right title? Can you fly?
Yes, is the answer. I'm actually still a seaplane instructor.
An examiner? Would you be an examiner?
Yes, I would be a seaplane examiner as well. But the funny thing about it was when I started seaplane flying first, everybody objected to seaplane flying because nobody knew anything about it. Oh. And the first time I got the seaplane, it was the Irish Aviation Authority, or as it was known at that time, the Department of Transport, was in O'Connell Bridge House. I crossed O'Connell Bridge House, landing in the lift one occasion.
Oh no, you couldn't!
and all hell broke loose. So I said, "What rules am I breaking here at this stage?" So that kind of had to be grown into a business at that time. Everybody was like landing in the tunnel. People were complaining, you were scaring the cattle to death, and they were running out over the place, which was totally untrue, by the way. As you know yourself, Murray, you have your private pilot's license. If you're landing in a field, you can stack sheep to one corner of the field, but cattle will just look up at you and keep grazing the cud and just looking at you. Like, what the hell are you doing there? You know, it was funny. The seaplane flying at the time was the farmers were giving out about you were fighting the daylights out of the cows, which was totally untrue. But anyway, cloakbend flying eventually then became accepted.
Okay.
Which was great. And that was, now we ran a float plane business as well, but it just, you couldn't do the amount of hours that were necessary to keep a float plane going. The weather wasn't acceptable enough, and here the weather in Ireland wasn't fine enough.
Yes.
To do that, and that would actually pay for itself.
But you did qualify. I'm not going to ask you a question because this is going around in my head. Between which bridges in the Liffey did you land?
I crossed O'Connell Bridge, I crossed Tara Street, and then landed after that. The other bridges hadn't been built at the time, and you went running down the Liffey. Anyway, it was a bit of fun at the time. But anyway, there you go.
Yes, well, I'd say there was the odd surprise and the odd eyebrow raised there. I have other comments, but I won't. Okay, now, you thought women are meant to fly. Did you notice any difference? Not at all, I assume, hopefully.
And what?
And students, women and men. Do you think there's any difference?
There's no difference between men and women flying whatsoever. None. Absolutely none, except for the following. Women will normally use their feminine charms a little bit more often than guys will. Guys will do it as I'm going to master this. Women are a lot more gentle and in fact, are absolutely the same as pilots or as male pilots when it goes to the airline business. They're great.
Yeah. Oh, that's super. Now, I know I'm a certain age. And I know I started quite late. Would you encourage people to, if they always had a dream and never had the money, but they're in their late 50s or whatever, would you encourage
them? They could be in their late 80s and learn to fly right now. I mean, I know you're not that. I mean, I might be getting close to it at this stage, but of course they can learn to fly. And I mean, you don't have to get a license on that. You can go solo if you want and say, okay, I've done that.
Yes.
Or you can get a license if you want to and rent an aircraft. The National Flight Center is still going very well in Weston Airport, to the west of the city. And they'll teach anybody you like to fly, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful. Would you encourage young people to become a commercial pilot as a full-time career?
I would if they have the money, as quick as that. Mm-hmm. It will cost you now, for a basic license, will cost you about €90,000. And that's just the license that you have. Now, you want to go into an airline like Ryanair or even Aer Lingus now at this stage, people charge for the additional type rating, which is a 737 in the case of Ryanair and the Airbuses in the case of Aer Lingus. But, I mean, you're talking about nearly 150,000 by the time that you get your qualification to go as a co-pilot in an airline. Now, remember, the license you have is dependent on a medical every year. So you're really committing yourself into it. You know, I mean, whatever you're doing, you're really committing yourself to a lot of money. So you really want to tap daddy on the shoulders and see if he'll pay for it. Or whatever it is like that. But if you borrow the money for that, it'll take you a long time to pay it back. And as a co-pilot in airlines at the moment, you don't really get paid all that much until you get some time on the aircraft as such. Do you know what I mean?
So it is tough. It's very tough.
It's tough. The license itself is tough, and to get a job in an airline is tough. But the cost of it is the cost is quite extreme in a way, and you're not going to get a huge amount of money at an early stage of your flying career in an airline.
Okay.
It wouldn't even pay. You couldn't pay the amount that it cost back in its full amount. You know what I mean? You wouldn't be this, when you get a job. It'll be very difficult to pay your loan back if you had to borrow money for it or whatever.
I know we're very lucky in Ireland that we speak English because the aviation language is English.
The aviation language, believe it or believe it not, is actually English, Spanish, and Russian.
Oh.
However, you must be able to speak English on an international basis. But if you're if a Russian is flying in Russia, he just speaks Russian in Russia.
Okay.
If a man was flying in Spain and he stayed within the confines of Spain, or indeed the other Spanish countries that you're talking about, South America, there's quite a number of countries on there that only speak Spanish, others that speak Portuguese. And if you're flying within the confines of those countries, you only need to speak the language that you have. But on an international basis, you need a level 4 level in English. It doesn't have to be a level 6 or a level 5. A level 4 is good enough to fly internationally.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't know that. There's just more questions that I want to ask you because our time is beginning to run out. Have you ever flown in a biplane?
Yes, I flew a Tiger Moth.
Oh, wonderful.
I flew a Stearman. Yeah, they would have been. I think those two were the only two I think I did fly that were biplanes.
And is there anywhere in the world that you would like to fly around? I mean, somewhere, just something that you would like to do?
I have been around the globe dozens and dozens of times.
And up and down and up and down and around.
And the one thing you must remember, the cloud is always white. And the ground is either, it's India, it's red.
Oh.
Across the Sahara, it's more or less sandish type of thing. And Africa, unlike what the Christian Brothers said, that it never rains in Africa, is absolutely wrong. It flocks rain through the middle of Africa, where you have tremendous thunderstorms and things like that. But anyway, there you go.
That's wonderful. Well, Captain Kieran O'Connor, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on to Near FM, the Lifeline programme, and I really appreciate you taking your time out today to tell us all about it.
You're not a bother. Delighted. Anytime, Maura.
Thank you very much, and I hope you have a lovely day. Thank you, Kieran.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.